Mr. Roth, Reel 2. Now, can we look now at the actual call-up procedure? Now, when did you actually qualify and how long after it was it that you were called up?
Well, I took the Law Society final exams in March, and you got the result after about 6 weeks, which more or less coincided with the completion of my 5 years articles. So by the end of April, I had passed the finals, done 5 years articles, and so was admitted to the role of solicitors. And I was actually admitted, from memory, I think it was the 29th of May. I'm pretty sure it was the 29th of May I was formally admitted.
And what about the call-up? What stages did you go through?
I have to say the War Office were very much on them. I don't remember whether I notified them that I had completed it all or whether they had worked it out. All I know is it suddenly I get papers telling me to go for a medical to Southampton. And I went and had the medical and was passed A1.
How stringent was it? I mean, were they really looking at you or were they just going to pass everyone?
Oh, no. It was a fairly full medical. And I think I'm fairly confident in saying by this time that any minor medical defect, they tended to not call you up because the National Service was now scaling down. And I think a lot of people, I can think of contemporaries who didn't get called up for what seemed really very minor medical reasons. And I think there was by now a policy of scaling down. And that was one of the ways of doing it.
Was there any aptitude test done at the time? I'm wondering, because you got assigned to the Royal Artillery. I wondered, which is perhaps not where I'd have put someone who was no good at maths.
Well, I'm delighted to hear you say that, because it seemed to me to be amazing. But I've no idea. No, the medical was simply a medical.
There was no intelligence or
none at all. Not that I can remember at all. And the next thing I was told that I had to report to 6-7 Selection Regiment, Oswestry.
67 Selection Regiment. Now that you went there on the 21st of June 1956.
Yes.
And that was for your basic training as a gunner. You were going in as a gunner.
No. The artillery worked slightly different to other regiments because the artillery was a very large unit, but of course it had a very wide range of requirements: drivers, wireless operators, technical assistants, radar operators, etc. So what you did was you did 2 weeks in the selection regiment. Now you had all the aptitude tests and so forth. A lot of PT, a lot of drilling, a lot of generally being buggered about in the best traditions. But also a lot of filtering and sieving as to your talents and skills and abilities.
Tell us about these aptitude tests, selection tests, that you can perhaps remember. I don't know whether you remember any of them.
Oh, I have to say I don't remember them with any great particularity, but they were the sort of, four shapes and where do you put the fifth one type of thing. But also, I seem to remember, I think you did several written tests. And the consequence at the end of it, I was classified other ranks grade one, which meant you were a potential officer material.
This took place in 2 weeks, and then did you stay there after that?
Because no.
You seem to have gone to Mons, to Aldershot in September.
Yeah, no. In fact, at the end of the 2 weeks, everybody had been classified into what they were going to be, drivers, signalers, and so forth. And you now went off to different training regiments. And I personally went from Oswestry to a place called Tom Thanau, on the west coast of Wales, Tonfanau, I think, if you want to write that down. And that, and strangely enough, I remember this too, that was 5-5 Training Regiment Royal Artillery. It was heavy ack-ack, and it was literally down on the beach.
Now, what happened When you got there, how did they take you in as you arrived as a grade one officer's cadet material, whatever, you know? How did they take you into the training regiment?
We travelled en masse by train from Oswestry, and we chugged our way through the Welsh mountains. And we arrived, and we were tipped out of this train, and all the heavy AK-AK guns happened to be firing it. It was absolute bedlam. It was bedlam. And there was a towing plane towing the target, and all the 5.5 heavy AK-AK guns were all banging away. And there was sergeants screaming and shouting at you, and the whole thing was traumatic, really. And, of course, you were moving. And moving in those days in the army was a nightmare, because you'd worked out all the hazards and perils and traps in Oswestry, and now you were suddenly in a completely new environment. You had to relearn all the hazards again.
So what happened then? You went all shouting. Yeah. You were sold to your billets.
You were sorted into troops, and I was in K Troop. And again, I don't know why I remember this, but it was K Troop. You were marched off to your billets, and there's now about... you were 18 to a billet. And then the first thing you were told is that you had to change all your blanket. Now, I cannot remember which way round it was. As Oswestry, it was either the blanket was green or yellow. And then when you got to Tom Thunay, you had to go to the other. In hindsight, I am convinced that this was all part of the general buggering you about and grinding you down process. I'm sure of that in hindsight. I didn't realise at the time. I mean, all you were doing was keeping your head down and trying to survive. But imagine 36 in dreadful, awful little showers, scrubbing all your, you know, big pack, small pack, belts, webbing, and having to re-blanket it. It was an absolute nightmare.
Now, tell me about the hut. I presume it was a hut.
Yes.
Can you describe the sort of layout of the hut and how you were, and what was your personal space in it?
In Tom Thunay, the huts, I'm fairly certain there was 18, or was it 12? I don't know. It was either 12 or 18. In hindsight, it may be 12. And it was a single hut. And you had a bed and a locker. And a little bedside locker, and that was it. The thing that I remember...
Was there an NCO in there with you at the end of the hut?
Yes, but he had a little room of his own. he had a little room of his own. And he was either a lance bombardier or a bombardier, which, of course, artillery, you probably know that, corporal. And he would have a little room at the end, that's right.
Now, one way of looking at training is to go through a typical day, and it does mean a lot of things are picked up. There is no such thing as a typical day, but I mean,
no.
What we do is sort of have a look at the sort of things you might have been doing. What time would you start in the morning, roughly speaking?
6:30. Suddenly, there's a man coming in with a pick hole, banging the end of your bed and bellowing, and you all sort of stumbled out of bed. I was there in summer, so I missed some of the ultimate horrors. But, I mean, the washrooms, you had to go to another area. Totally inadequate. The water would never seem to be hot. So you were shaving in basically cold water. It was all an absolute hell, really. And somebody like myself, who had come from a fairly comfortable middle-class setting, you know, and lived in relatively comfortable homes and so forth. And, of course, now 24, it was a gigantic sort of culture shock. But having said that, I mean, to me, the whole art of the thing was survival. And you found out as quickly as you could the hazards, you know, the kind of things that were going to bring the roof down around your ears. You tried to... work out which NCOs were going to give you a hard time and which were not going to give you. Now, I have to say a lot of that, I think, comes from the fact that I am now 24. I mean, I was a qualified solicitor. I was used to the ways of the world. And I'd spent weeks in prisons, interviewing clients and taking statements and this sort of thing. So I suppose I probably was looking at it all in a slightly different way to your 18-year-old. But then, after 2 weeks at Tom Funai...
Hang on. Let's a bit more about sort of the conditions. So you get up, you have your sort of wash and
yeah.
And what about the food? I know you're not that interested in food from the conversation we had off, but what did you think of the food compared to what you were used to?
Dreadful.
In what way? What was so dreadful about it?
Can I backtrack to Oswestry and tell you a story here now? Just before I enlisted, I was talking to a man in Cowes who had himself also gone into the artillery and had gone, first of all, to Oswestry. When he heard where I was going, he started falling about laughing, and he said, well, remember to watch out for the birds in the cookhouse. And I said, what are you on about? He said, when you get into the cookhouse, he said, all the birds are sitting on the rafters. He said, if you're not careful and don't keep an eye, he said, you'll get a little addition to your meal that you could do without. Now, I thought that this was an absolutely typical old soldier send-up. And on my very first afternoon, when we were marched down to the cookhouse to have our evening meal, and I walked in and I saw the birds sitting in long lines on the rafters, I could not believe it. And I thought, oh, my God. He was not sending me up. It's absolutely true. And I have to say, it was difficult to distinguish the quality of the food that was on your plate from the quality of the food that tended to come down from the rafters. But yes, I can't remember with any great particularity now. But
would you say it was the poor quality ingredients or bad cooking. Or bad presentation or all three?
Bad cooking, bad presentation. And I have very good reasons for telling you that.
Do they happen now or later? So
well, that'll come in Mons if you want me to tell you then. But I can give you a clearest example of basically inept, crass cooking.
Now, so after breakfast, what sort of basic training would you be doing there? Give us an idea of what the sessions were. Perhaps drill.
A lot of drill, of course. I'm trying to think.
How did you take to drill? Because you're 24,
yeah.
Not that easily told what to do, I imagine.
Well, you were so bombarded, you didn't. You just kept your head down and kept going. But yes, I found it. I think the 18-year-olds probably wasn't as big a shock to them as it was to me. But I mean, you just got on with it. There was no way out.
Did you see the point of drill at the time? Perhaps you did later, but at the time, did you see why you had to do so much?
No, not really. I mean, it became increasingly apparent to me as the time went on, and especially, of course, when I was commissioned.
We'll drift in.
It became increasingly apparent, but at that stage, it just seemed to be a kind of mindless nightmare.
What about other training sessions? I mean, what would you have? Any weapons training?
Yes. Well, you started, I think at this, I'm trying to remember, I think at this stage now, we started drilling with rifles, which was a sort of major step forward. You started doing certain basic artillery-type trainings. In other words, the radar, those earmarked to become radar operators would go off to radar training classes.
Did you do that?
Well, no, you see, because a very strange thing happens to me and one or two others, because 5-5 Regiment had a different policy to other training regiments. Now, after you'd been there about 10 days, you went off on the next stage of the officer selection, which was the unit selection board. The Army beloved of acronyms, of course, was always referred to as USBE. And this was, you went in front of a panel of three senior officers. And you were, as far as I remember, you were interviewed. And, of course, by this time you had done a whole lot of aptitude tests and that in your, from that, which I assume they had all of that. And you then either passed that or failed it. And I passed it.
Do you remember much about what they were asking you? Or?
Not really. Not really. It. I think they went into your background and
was there still an element of choosing within the middle classes and upper, in other words, was there a social?
Oh, I think so.
Was it done on merit? Or both?
I think it was a mix of the two. But again, in the light of hindsight, I'm quite sure that there was a social aspect to it. And the failure rate was significantly high now because I think I'm right in saying that at the end of the fortnight at Oswestry, there were 64 of us classified as OR1. In other words, potential offer material. After the USBE stage, that 64 had dropped to 16. So you can see there was a pretty high fallout rate at the USBE stage. Now, what 5-5 regiment did was that if you passed USBE, you were moved into a troop which was called Y troop. And that meant you had to put a little green flash up on your shoulder epaulettes. And you were now a marked man, and everybody hated you. Because all of those who were never going to be officers hated you on principle, because they perceived that one day you would be an officer. Most of the NCOs had all of themselves been OR1s who had failed either at USBE or at WASBE stage, so they hated you as well. And you were pariahs. We also then did a very different kind of training. The training that we then did was much more orientated to what we would do when we got to officer cadet school, assuming that we did.
But tell us about that kind of training. What sort of thing were you doing?
Well, you were doing more, it was more lectures, more sort of theory, if I can put it that
way. Theory of what? Gunnery?
Not only good gunnery, but also of basic, if you like, soldiering skills, because in due course, where at officer cadet school was divided into two, but I'll come to that but the training was slanted, and it was less specifically about gunnery and more general terms, really. I can't remember with any enormous clarity now, but it was different. The downside, as I say, was having this green flash and really being hated by everybody. The gain was that there was only five of us in a billet of 12. And we were an extraordinary five because there was two solicitors, a barrister, an architect, and a university graduate with an honours degree in geography. So were all of us... Robin, actually, the graduate, he was actually a couple of years younger, but we are all of us now over 21, intelligent. I hope I don't sound too egotistic, but reasonably intelligent. We had our own billet. Now, that meant that we could be seriously organised, and so a lot of the worst aspects of being in basic training, like, you know, just bed layout, which you had to build up. If you were in a billet of 12, and there was 12 of you, you had to sleep in your bed, so you had to relay it each morning, if you follow me. We now had beds to spare, so we each had a bed with our layout on, which we could leave and build up, and we didn't have to dismantle it every night to go to bed. Now, this may sound slightly trivial, but it was deeply significant, because it actually meant that you had a bit of time to yourself when you could sit around and... contemplate what it would be like to get out into the outside world again.
What about, can I just ask, did you do any theory of gunnery? Because I'm wondering when this, because it must have been like a sword of Damocles hanging above your head, because there's no way of avoiding things like trigonometry once you go into gunnery.
No, we didn't, you see. This is the curious thing about, and this was peculiar to 5-5 Regiment, that we did not do a lot of gunnery at this stage, because... They were concentrating more on the kind of general officer. There was a disadvantage in that, but it didn't become apparent till rather later.
Now, can I ask how you got on generally with the cadets, both your special friends that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And earlier with the well, you know, when you were in the hut with 12 or 18, how did generally you get on with them I have to say,
I found that a fascinating experience because the 2 weeks at Oswestry, we're definitely in 18. I remember that with great particularity. Two of us were newly qualified solicitors, a chap called Martin Ellis and myself. The other 16 did not have a single educational qualification of any kind, except for the lad in the bed next to me who had a City and Guilds certificate in bookmaking. Five out of the 16 couldn't read or write. This was an extraordinary, and Martin and I, the other solicitor, we were the grand old men of the billet. But I have to say, we were never made to feel somehow as if we were pariahs. And when I analysed that later, I think there was a kind of recognition that we were as much in the deep end as them. And I think there was a sort of general camaraderie because, that first fortnight was an absolute nightmare. And in hindsight, I think that they just accepted that we were, and indeed, in fact, the two of us got picked on because the sergeant would always pick on us for all of the very worst kind of fatigue. We better have the educated gentleman doing this one, hadn't we? This sort of thing, And so I remember one in particular. Everybody had to number their belt. You haven't asked me yet what my number was. 2331815. And have you ever met anybody who didn't remember his number?
No.
It was so driven into you that I think it's in there forever. But you had to put this number onto your belt. And it was quite difficult because you had to use individual and you had to bang them. And this sergeant made Martin and I do all 18 belts. And we ended up covered in this ink, and it took us till nearly midnight. It was a rousy, stinking job. And he said, of course, we've got to have the clever ones doing this, haven't we, and little things like that.
Were all the instructors like that? How did you get on with them generally? Both, you can talk about the first 2 weeks at Oswestry as well. We glided past that. We can mention that. How did you get on with the instructors generally?
Well, you didn't. They just harassed you from morning till night.
What form did the harassment take?
Oh, shouting, doubling you everywhere. going bed layouts, they'd say, that the needle's pointing the wrong way, so just literally tip the whole bed up and shatter the whole lot across the floor. That kind of thing. And a kind of general psychological domination,
Did they do a lot of swearing, or was it...
Oh, yes. The language was fairly fruity.
Were they fair in any way? The incident you mentioned doesn't sound fair at all, but, were they hard on everybody in their own way,
I think they were, and I think that's why, although Martin and I, in a sense, were like two sore thumbs, that I was never aware of any animosity towards us from the other 16, because we obviously, we were solicitors and came from middle class background. And I think, as I say, in hindsight, I attribute that as much because we were as deeply in it as the rest of them. And if indeed marginally, almost getting it worse because we were being targeted as being the intelligent ones.
Do you think the instructors had that in mind when they did it, or was that an
unplanned? No. I think the instructors. It's clear the object of the exercise was really to break you down. The psychology was to break you down and then rebuild you in the mould that they wanted. I don't think I actually worked that out then, but in hindsight, I realise now that this was very much... And I have to say that it worked.
It worked on you?
It worked on everybody. I can tell you, that 18, as I say, you had teddy boys with hair down to their... hair down to their shoulders, and there was one in particular had very blonde hair, and the sergeant, when we were all marched to the barber's, the sergeant called the barber out. He said, "I want this one done first, please." Now, I'd had my hair cut what I thought was quite short in anticipation, you know, of a military haircut. I had no idea they basically took it all off and left you with a sort of 2-inch stubble over the top. But this fellow, I remember the barber put his hand on the top of his head and he got the sort of shears, and he just went up the back of his head, great swathes, and the whole of the back of his head was bald, you know. all of this, I think, was calculated, but it did, in a sense, it worked, because at the end of 14 days, you had 18 young men who were relatively smart, jumped, you know, and in a brutal kind of way, it did work. And let's face it, they had, you know, they got hundreds of thousands coming in. You know, you had to mould them, didn't you?
What about preparing for kit inspections or your room, you know, the bed inspection? How far did it go? How much pull did they...
Oh, terrific amount. Terrific amount. And most of it seemed to be mindless. I mentioned a few minutes ago needles. You had a little thing called a housewife, which was a little white... sachet, I suppose, for want of a better word. And of course, the amazing thing was that in basic training, you were never able to use any of these things because this had to be gleaming white, it had to be in exact shape with the tape beautifully flat and blankered, and the three needles had to be in it at exactly the right spacing, and the points of the needles had to point towards the door. And I remember one complete bed being completely upended because the sergeant spotted that the needles were pointing the wrong way, you know. Now, in a sense, it's totally mindless, but on the other hand, if in fact what you're trying to do is to instill into people that they will bloody well do as they're told, will not ask why they're being asked to do that, but simply do it, then it works.
What about things like boots and buttons, polishing boots?
Yes, oh yeah.
Boots is a subject on its own, in the sense.
Oh, absolutely.
How far did they go? I mean, was it underneath as well, and the studs, or was it?
The first thing you did, first, of course, you're issued with this ammunition boot, which had been designed and very carefully created to be waterproof, etc. So the first thing you did was you got rid of all the bubbles. You ironed out that, which basically took away the waterproofing, so that ever after that, they were no longer waterproof. And the toe cap, of course, you had to bull, and that was this incredible technique of spitting and twirling your finger and so forth. I was never very good at that, I have to say. I found bulling boots quite difficult. And when we got into Y Troop, the five of us, we then got completely organized. And Martin, who loved ironing and was a great ironer, was the iron man. I and Robin were the brass, we did all the brasses. Giles Harwood, the barrister, was brilliant at bulling boots, so he bulled all the boots. And Colin Morell used to do all the blanker. So consequently, you know, we were highly organised, the five of us, and that actually made things a bit more bearable.
What about preparing around the bed area and that sort of thing?
Oh yes, you know, and of course the inspections, and they'd run their finger along the top of the door, you know, and if any dust came up, that was it, you know.